Hello and welcome to the Georgia Today podcast from GPB News. Today is Wednesday, October 9th. I'm Orlando Montoya. On today's episode, FEMA helps residents of Georgia clean up from Hurricane Helene, even as Hurricane Milton bears down on Florida. A minor plane collision last month jarred passengers at Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport. We'll tell you what was behind the collision. And as part of Georgia Pre-K Week, a former UGA Bulldog and a former NFL player talks about children's literacy. Those stories and more are coming up on this edition of Georgia Today. As Georgia continues to recover from Hurricane Helene, Hurricane Milton is bearing down on Florida. This busy hurricane season has put emergency services in the spotlight, and no agency more than the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. To help answer some of the questions, we're going to speak now with Jacqueline Rothenberg, FEMA's Public Affairs Director. Thanks so much for talking to me today.
Thank you for having me.
There seems to be some confusion about FEMA's specific role in Georgia for Hurricane Helene recovery. What are you responsible for? And talk about some of the things you're doing.
Yeah, so FEMA is responsible for helping these communities recover following the disaster, things like debris removal, helping people get access to our individual assistance program. I believe now there are about $50 million we've given out to nearly over 60,000 households. That's people that have applied for assistance from FEMA. And so our objective right now is to make sure we help reach as many people as possible, that they continue applying for assistance from us by visiting disasterassistance.gov.
Now, there are different types of financial aid that some people qualify for. Can you talk about immediate assistance? This is that $750 amount we've heard so much about.
So I'm really glad you asked that question, because you're right. There has been a lot of confusion about this program. The $750 is intended to be for immediate needs for people. That includes things like clothing or medicine, baby formula. FEMA's individual assistance program is quite broad. It includes assistance for things like home repair, our serious needs assistance program, which is where people hear that $750 from, which is only the beginning of what you'll receive from FEMA. It includes personal property assistance, if your roof is damaged, if you have mold in your home. And so there's a variety of different options that you can qualify for if you apply for assistance from FEMA. That's by visiting disasterassistance.gov.
With electricity still out in some places, as well as unreliable cell service, what's the best way for people to reach you?
So the best way to reach us, so we have our disaster survivor assistance teams that are going into neighborhoods to sign people up for assistance if you're someone that doesn't have power. We also have our disaster recovery centers that are opening across the state, and we'll make sure that you have that information so you can give out those addresses. Those are some of the best places for people to sign up for assistance from FEMA. We also have our disasterassistance.gov, as well as our hotline to help people sign up if they have access to a phone.
Longer term, what kinds of assistance are available and who qualifies?
Longer term, so we have our public assistance program. That's for the state to rebuild critical infrastructure, any of those bigger projects that were damaged, things like roads, bridges, schools. And then our individual assistance program, there is still time for people to apply for assistance from FEMA if you're in one of those areas. And so that's why it's really important that people apply as soon as possible to get you into the system.
And finally, how is all of this straining your resources this hurricane season? Do you have what you need?
FEMA does have what it needs in order to respond to both Hurricane Helene and Hurricane Milton. We have enough funding. The CR that was passed gave FEMA additional funding to be able to respond to these two events. But in terms of staffing, FEMA trains for this. We have a 24,000 strong workforce that is deploying into the field, that is ready to manage both of these events. We have people, especially in the state of Florida, that have been helping the state recover from Hurricanes Idalia and Ian and Debbie, as well as Helene, and they're also going to be supporting Hurricane Milton.
Jacqueline Rothenberg, FEMA's Public Affairs Director, thanks so much for talking to Georgia Public Broadcasting.
Thank you.
As Hurricane Milton barrels toward Florida's Gulf Coast, tropical storm warnings were issued on the Atlantic coast as far north as Savannah, about 200 miles from the projected path of the storm's center. On Georgia's coast, storm surges of between 2 and 4 feet could overrun some low-lying roads, and wind gusts of up to 45 miles per hour could break off large tree limbs and cause power outages. Savannah Mayor Van Johnson urged residents to prepare for what he called a scary storm.
We just did this, and now we're back in this again. But then, we look at our friends in Florida. Many of them are in Savannah, and they don't know if they have a home to go back to.
The Red Cross says all Florida travelers fleeing Hurricane Milton can find safety and shelter in Georgia evacuation centers. GPB's Ellen Eldridge has more.
Those heading to Georgia can find safe locations to wait out whatever Milton brings, but they may need to go a little farther. Often evacuees seek shelter in the Valdosta area close to Interstate 75 and just over the Florida border. But that area is still trying to recover from Hurricane Helene. Susan Lawler is with the Red Cross. She says people can find a place to stay using the Red Cross phone app that helped one Florida family get to Macon.
They drove 18 hours and they were able to find the evacuation center on the app, and they drove right there. And she told her husband, "We are leaving."
Lawler says people without a smartphone can also find a place to stay by calling 1-800-RED-CROSS. For GPB News, I'm Ellen Eldridge.
As Floridians prepare for the arrival of Hurricane Milton, FEMA Administrator Deanne Criswell says federal partners have had boots on the ground for weeks as they clean up damage from Hurricane Helene.
Across all of the states that have been impacted by Helene, I have over 5,200 federal responders. Remember, FEMA is just part of the team. And so that is from across the federal government, from all of our partners supporting the response and the recovery efforts in all 6 states that were impacted.
Criswell emphasized that FEMA and its partners are working alongside state and local governments to handle what she describes as an increase in the number of disasters. Volunteers also are working to help South Georgia residents. One campground run by the Methodist Church has become a staging ground for people offering assistance. The Reverend Jerry Hudson is the director of Camp Tigert in Berrien County. He says many in his Valdosta congregation have been without power or water for nearly 2 weeks.
We had a real brief church service, but afterwards we passed out cleaning supplies and personal hygiene products and stuff like that to the community.
Volunteers of all faiths have come from across the Southeast to provide relief supplies and help with cleanup, including debris removal. A Fulton County judge has dismissed a petition that would force Governor Brian Kemp to investigate 3 members of the state election board. GPB's Sarah Callis has the latest.
Fulton County Superior Court Judge Ural Glanville dismissed the petition filed by State Senator Nabila Islam Parks. Her lawyers argued Kemp must hold a hearing to investigate Trump-backed members of the board, Janelle King, Rick Jeffries, and Janice Johnston, who were accused by Islam Parks and others of ethics violations. The judge sided with Kemp's lawyers, who argued the governor is not obligated to act, since formal charges have not been filed against the SEB members. But attorney for the petitioners, Wayne Kendall, said,
"And we are going to be filing an immediate appeal because we think these board members are operating in a rogue manner that is unethical."
Meanwhile, the state election board continues to meet as the presidential election nears. On Tuesday, board members voted to subpoena documents from Fulton County's 2020 presidential election, despite Attorney General Chris Carr saying the election is closed. Member Janice Johnston also proposed additional monitors for Fulton, even though the county favored a group proposed by former Secretary of State Attorney Ryan Germany and monitors from the Carter Center.
This state election board will not support that team and will not consider their findings valid when they present them.
The board will meet again before the November election. For GPB News, I'm Sarah Callis in Atlanta.
Aviation safety officials have issued their preliminary report on a taxiway mishap last month at Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport. Nearly 300 people were aboard 2 planes when the larger plane's right wing hit the smaller plane's tail, knocking the tail over and rotating the smaller plane by 9 degrees. One crew member reported a minor injury, but otherwise no one was hurt in what passengers reported as a jarring experience. The National Transportation Safety Board report says the larger plane's pilot was looking away from the smaller plane's tail when the collision occurred. An environmental official for Metro Atlanta's Rockdale County collapsed and died at the state capitol yesterday after testifying at a hearing about the biolab fire. Lawmakers say 62-year-old Soil and Water Conservation District Supervisor Kenny Johnson complained of shortness of breath before collapsing and being rushed to a hospital. He just had spoken alongside other frustrated Rockdale County residents about the fire and its subsequent hazardous plume, which lingered over the community for a week. Stone Mountain State Representative Viola Davis remembered Johnson for his, quote, unwavering commitment to environmental justice. State environmental officials have approved permits for four wells to send 4 million gallons of water a day to the Hyundai plant now producing electric vehicles in southeast Georgia. The permits issued Monday by the Georgia Environmental Protection Division allow Bullock and Bryan counties to withdraw a total of about 6.6 million gallons of water per day from the region's underground water source, the Floridan Aquifer. The wells have sparked intense pushback from local residents, farmers, and environmental groups. The permits require the counties to create a fund to reimburse people whose nearby wells are affected by the new withdrawals. They also require the counties to stop using the wells after 25 years, during which time EPD officials expect the counties to find an alternative water source. The Ogeechee Riverkeeper blasted the agency for allowing, quote, industry to monopolize our limited, pristine groundwater. Many Georgia pre-K programs this week will welcome political leaders and local celebrities to read to children as part of Georgia Pre-K Week, a celebration of the state's pre-K program. One of those celebrities is Georgia resident and former NFL star Malcolm Mitchell. As a wide receiver for the New England Patriots, he helped the team win the Super Bowl in 2017. Before that, the Valdosta native had an award-winning football career at the University of Georgia. But he says his biggest achievement is reading. Mitchell joins me in the studio now. Thanks for coming in.
So happy to be here. Happy to share. Thank you for having me on.
Now, you excelled at football early, but when did you realize that you were struggling with reading?
Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention I was born and raised in Valdosta, Georgia, home to the winningest high school football program in the country. So it's very easy to understand how I gravitated towards playing that sport in that type of environment. The consequences for growing up in a financially deprived community is that I did not always understand the importance of an education. The reason for that is that there are not many people walking around touting their academic accolades and how it empowered their future. So there is just this disconnect between understanding how reading, having an education, could get me where I wanted to be at in life.
Was it hard to tell people?
Well, I don't think it's very popular to run around shouting that you struggle to read, especially with the athletic accolades that I possessed. I believe I was an all-SEC freshman of the year, but having a hard time reading Fox and Socks by Dr. Seuss.
You talk about your moment with the telltale heart, that was a particular moment as well.
Fair enough. I remember being in my English 1102 class, and I wish I could remember the professor because she did an astounding job. But there was this moment where we were asked to read aloud in class in popcorn reading style. For those who don't know, it's when one student reads a paragraph and has the option to call on any other student in the classroom to read a paragraph. And for someone who struggles to read, it's a nightmare. In fact, reliving those moments during this conversation is making me sweat. And there's one student who volunteered to read the entire passage. And when she began to read, I immediately felt inferior because I know I didn't possess that same ability. And as a competitor, I wanted to do something about it.
What would you tell others in that situation now, people who might have problems reading, maybe they're in high school or earlier, and they can't tell people? What would you tell them?
I grew up in an environment where it was not uncommon for individuals to have only their mother or their grandmother or their aunt. I grew up in an environment where it wasn't uncommon for financial challenges to persist on a daily basis. I've also had the privilege of playing in a Super Bowl. Between that wide range of perspective, I have concluded that reading, being literate, is the most self-empowering tool a person could possess. I understand that it could be challenging. I understand that it could be difficult. I understand that you may not always understand its value because it is delayed gratification in a world that's full of immediate gratification. But if you struggle, I encourage you not to ignore that. Because whatever you want to accomplish, it is more likely to happen if you can read proficiently.
You've written that you visited bookstores and libraries to help you learn. What books in particular help you learn?
Picture books. Oh, I love reading children's literature, and that's what inspired me to start writing and becoming a author myself.
And you expressed your own voice in your first children's book, The Magician's Hat, while you were in college.
That's right.
You did this to challenge others. Did it also challenge yourself?
1,000%. When I became so inspired by books, transitioning to writing wasn't necessarily my fear. Understanding how to put together a sentence and the structure of literature was a challenge because I was not an avid reader. But The Magician's Hat became this opportunity for me to try to inspire others how books had inspired me.
And now your Share the Magic Foundation encourages others. It's partnered with Georgia Literacy Council and others on Georgia Reads. What's that and how can people get involved?
I'll start by sharing, at this point in my life, reading has trumped any athletic accolade that I possess, even winning the Super Bowl. Share the Magic Foundation was created to inspire kids to read. Since 2016, we've encouraged over 1 million students, have participation in all 50 states and 16 other countries. One of our partnerships that we formed recently is with the Georgia Council on Literacy for their Georgia Reads campaign, and it's to publicly acknowledge communities that are making great efforts in increasing literacy rates amongst their students. The campaign is really centered around creating a unified effort in the state of Georgia to amplify literacy resources, the literacy message as a whole, and get everybody on the same page, understanding that a person, a community, a city, a state cannot move forward if the people that are living within that state are not embracing reading as a tool to empower their future. I don't care how much technology is incorporated into our daily lives. Having the ability to read, to think critically and analyze information based on this skill set is one that goes unmatched.
What kind of books do you like to read today?
I read a picture book to my son, Oakley, every night. I read a lot of biographies now, and I read a lot of fiction. It's through reading that my creativity really blossoms. If I am trying to extract some new emotion out of myself, I usually read. If I'm trying to think of new ideas, I usually read. If I'm trying to find a sense of freedom in all the challenges that the world has to offer on a daily basis, I read. So it's kind of encapsulated every aspect of my being at this point.
Well, Malcolm Mitchell, formerly of the New England Patriots and Super Bowl champion and an avid reader. Thank you for joining me today.
I appreciate you, my friend. Thank you.
And that's it for today's edition of Georgia Today. We'll continue to follow Hurricane Helene recovery and Hurricane Milton as it brings wind and rain to Florida and Georgia. Reminder, there's a lot of great information about storm resources at the Federal and State Emergency Management Agency websites. Those are gema.georgia.gov and disasterassistance.gov. Find more about these stories on Georgia Today at gpb.org/news. Always hit subscribe to this podcast if you haven't done so already. That'll help you to keep us current in your feed. Send us feedback to georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Orlando Montoya. I'll talk to you again tomorrow.